From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host today, Jody Heiss, sitting in for Tony this week and delighted to be with you today. Coming up on Washington Watch, let's begin with this clip.
Ukraine will become a member of NATO. Our purpose at the summit is to help build a bridge to that membership to create a clear pathway for Ukraine moving forward.
Well, that was Secretary of State Antony Blinken today from Belgium, where NATO leaders have initiated planning for long-term military support for Ukraine. And that includes possibly authorizing more than $100 billion in loans to the war-torn country. Has anyone asked whether or not those loans would ever be paid back? Well, I don't know about that, but there are some other questions that we want to hit on today, like what does a Ukraine NATO membership mean for the U.S.? And given the growing influence of China on Russia and Iran and other U.S. adversaries, can conflicts such as what's happening in Ukraine and Gaza be understood as Chinese proxy wars? Well, China expert Gordon Chang will be joining me here in just a few moments to discuss that. And here's one you're probably not hearing in the mainstream media, but could a demographic trend happening among Hispanic voters make a huge change in the upcoming electoral voting coming up this election cycle? And that trend, let me just tell you, is that Hispanics are increasingly identifying as evangelical Protestants. Extremely interesting development. I'll have a conversation with Samuel Rodriguez, who is the president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, a little bit later in the program. And we're continuing our daily segment on election integrity. This is coinciding with the release of my new book this week, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People, which is now available wherever you can purchase books, and I encourage you to get your copy as quickly as you can. Well, Jenny Beth Martin, who is the co-founder of the Tea Party Patriots, and she herself often has found herself in the thick of these election integrity battles. She'll be joining me to discuss some of the efforts that are taking place throughout the country on that issue. And voters continue to list border security as their top concern as the 24 elections quickly approach. And this week, the House Judiciary Committee announced an investigation into the Department of Homeland Security, catch this, after it failed to file summons in more than 200,000 cases. Unbelievable. I'll be talking about that and much more with Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs, who is a member of the House Judiciary Committee. So a lot to bring your way today, and you don't want to miss it. But in case you do, there's always the website, TonyPerkins.com. There's a lot of resources there for you, as well as archive programs. So be sure to take advantage of that website. All right, jumping into the first topic for today, the 32-nation alliance of NATO celebrated their 75th anniversary of its founding today. And while in Brussels for the occasion, Secretary of State Antony Blinken confirmed that Ukraine will eventually be accepted as a member nation. Well, this comes as the country's war against Russian invasion continues, and as a result, the Biden administration continues to push for Congress to pass additional billions of dollars in military spending for their effort. Well, joining me with his thoughts on all of this, as well as a discussion on the hidden player behind this crisis and potentially other crises around the world, is Gordon Chang. He's a distinguished senior fellow at the Gatestone Institute, also the author of The Coming Collapse of China and China is Going to War. And by the way, you can follow him on X under the handle at Gordon G. Chang. Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Thanks so much, Jody.
Okay, let's begin with this. I'm intrigued by this whole issue of the Chinese role behind so many conflicts taking place around the world. And you've said that, that frankly, we need to recognize Chinese influence on countries, including countries like Russia and Iran, that China appears to be happy to sit back and let other countries conduct their wars by proxy. Explain what you mean by all of this.
Well, China is now fighting proxy wars on three continents. It greenlighted the invasion of Ukraine, and it's supporting Russia across the board, especially with lethal aid. In North Africa, China and Russia are fueling insurgencies that look like wars, and China is backing Iran. So with elevated commodity purchases, last year, China purchased 90% of Iran's crude oil exports. But also we see diplomatic and propaganda support for the effort against Israel. Plus, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthi militia all have large quantities of Chinese weapons. So this is China going to war. Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, revered Mao Zedong. I think that Xi took two pages out of Mao's peasant movement playbook. And one of them was to create chaos around the world, because chaos, Mao Zedong felt, would lead to worldwide Chinese rule. So Xi Jinping is disrupting societies around the world, destroying them, because he believes that that will lead to his eventual control of all of humanity.
Wow. Well, none of us should be surprised that the mainstream media is, by and large, avoiding all that information. But this is information that people need to be aware of. I also wanted to get your thoughts today. Some of the remarks today made by Secretary of State Blinken, some are saying some of these remarks even sounded the alarm bells for a potential World War III. Do you agree? What are your thoughts on his comments?
Well, you can't admit somebody to NATO if it's already involved in a war. And as much as I believe in supporting the war against Russia, nonetheless, you can't do that while Ukraine is actually fighting, because that means that NATO would actually be fighting. We're not exactly clear of Blinken's timeline on this, on admission, but clearly the Biden administration failed. They failed with a catastrophic withdrawal of Afghanistan, and that led Vladimir Putin to think that he could invade Ukraine. Remember, Putin went after and took Crimea during Obama's administration. There was 4 years of peace while Trump was president. And then after Trump left office, you have Putin going against Ukraine again, this time for the rest of it that he didn't get in 2014. So really what we're having right now is perhaps the beginning of World War III. Remember, in the 1930s, there were separate wars that eventually merged into what we now call World War II. I think the same dynamic is at play today, because there is almost an irresistible momentum to global conflict.
Wow. Yeah, you're not the only one saying that. There's rumblings of that sentiment among many leaders that are out there talking today. You mentioned a while ago China's role even in Iran and also in Gaza. It's like they've got their fingerprints all over the place. But you mentioned their purchase of Iranian oil. Isn't that, in essence, them funding Hamas? I mean, isn't that part of what they're doing, do you think?
Absolutely. You know, first of all, there's elevated commodity purchases in Russia, which supports the Russian war effort, and China got away with it, so it's doing the same thing with Iran. And here's another statistic on Chinese purchases of Iranian oil. Last year, China's purchases were 60% above that in 2017. 2017 is relevant, Jody, because that was the last year before the Trump administration reimposed sanctions on the purchase of Iranian oil. So you can see that this war would not have occurred, Iran could not have afforded to attack Israel, were it not for China's backing of the Iranian regime. And also in 2021, there was that $400 billion 25-year announcement of a strategic partnership between Iran and China.
Well, that's a major point to bring up. While all of this is happening, I find it interesting that Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen arrived today in China for some economic meetings. Number one, do you think that's a good idea? Number two, what's going to come of it? What kind of things are they going to be discussing?
horrible idea and nothing will come of it. Remember, Janet Yellen was in Beijing last July. And so the question the American people should be asking is, what can Janet Yellen say? What can she accomplish now that she couldn't say or accomplish, you know, a half year ago? The problem here is that we talk to China, they delay while we have these discussions, and they ignore our warnings. And I think that Janet Yellen has just got to go and impose severe costs on China for predatory trade practices. That's what she's going there to talk about this time, especially the subsidies for China's green energy for their electric vehicles. Well, we know that China is engaged in all this. What can we say? So I think she just should start imposing costs. And we do that, then we might get somewhere. But this is not working at all.
Yeah, you know, it looks like more photo op than anything to make it appear that the administration is trying to do something. It looks like the administration's trying to look as though they are trying to strike a balance, if you will, between economic competition and maybe antagonism. I don't think there'll be a whole lot of antagonism there. We seem pretty much paralyzed. But are they misguided? Do you think that even some sort of balance, whatever it is they're trying to bring forth, is even possible?
It's not possible. And so the administration is at least misguided. Clearly, you know, the administration says these things that sound like they should work. You know, oh, we need to talk to China. Oh, we can do this and we can do that. The problem is, even though those things sound reasonable, we've been saying them now for more than three decades. And through three decades, China's behavior has deteriorated across the board, where now it is engaged in belligerent, provocative conduct, leading the world to war. And we've got to pivot. We have got to realize that our policies have just utterly failed. You know, we issue these warnings, as I mentioned, and we don't follow up. That's what led to World War II in Europe, where Britain and France, from 1936 on, issued all of these warnings to Hitler. And Hitler, you know, you get to August 1939 and Britain and France say, we're going to go to war if you invade Poland. We know from the archives, Jody, that nobody in Berlin believed London and Paris. Well, we are the British and French of this decade because we've issued three decades of warnings to China and failed to back them up.
Wow. Last question real quickly, and we've got about a minute only. We look at all the Chinese nationals who are now crossing the U.S. border illegally. The increase has been over 6,000% just since 2021. That year we had 342. Now we are already over 22,000 for this year. Are you concerned about that at all, real quickly?
Yeah, many of the migrants coming across look like they're soldiers or operatives. And that's what we have to be concerned about, that they're coming here to wage war on the U.S. They're doing things that are not consistent with desperate Chinese. They look like they're coming here to attack us. Remember that secret Chinese biological weapons lab in Reedley, California?
Oh, yeah.
I think that these migrants are going to take the mice from that lab and spread them around the U.S., creating a pandemic here.
Frightful. Gordon Chang, thank you so much. Always great to have you on the program. We're deeply grateful for your insight. Okay, friends, coming up, important issue that's not being discussed on the mainstream media. How could Hispanic evangelical Protestants lead to an upending of many American political expectations? We'll talk about that right after the break, so don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. An honor to have you on board with us today. All right, I don't know if you saw this or not, but a recent New York Times presidential poll has showed Donald Trump leading President Biden among Hispanic voters. Folks, this is shocking many in the political world because this has long been considered a solid Democrat voting bloc. But Hispanic voting trends are shifting. And quite frankly, they defy a lot of classifications. But this comes as some demographic experts are now estimating that within 10 years, half of all Hispanic voters will identify as Protestant evangelicals. Folks, not only is this great news for the kingdom of God, but what in the world will be the impact that this could have on American politics? Well, joining me now to discuss all of this is Pastor Samuel Rodriguez, the president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference. Pastor Rodriguez, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, well, let's begin first of all. Have you found the premise that we just talked about to be true?
True, accurate, but not surprising. Hispanics are, by our very cultural DNA, our very cultural nature, we're people of faith, family, and freedom. And as a result, I remember when 44% supported George W. Bush in 2004, I sat down with Karl Rove over dinner. There was an expectation for that 50% threshold to have been met in the late early 2000s, meaning 2008, 2009, 2010. And then the narrative shifted and there was controversy over immigration. And here we are in our current reality. Look, Hispanics are people of faith. God is everything. The majority of us are either Catholic or evangelical. Very few Hispanic Episcopalians, okay? For that, as a matter of fact. So you're either an evangelical or you're a Catholic. More and more are becoming evangelical every single day. We are pro-life, pro-religious liberty, committed to biblical justice. We don't believe that government is God, hence socialism and communism are antithetical to our faith, and we believe in parental rights. That's the reality of the Latino community, hence the demographical shift that you referenced.
Wow, it's amazing. You know, because all the political pundits say otherwise. I mean, they have for years been saying that the Latino community is like a shoe-in for the Democratic Party. But they are now finding out that Latinos are much more grounded in biblical truth and values than was expected. What was the disconnect there, do you think?
Perpetual victimization. Latinos repudiate the progressive part of our electorate, the hard left, the liberals, labeling Latinos as perpetual victims, if not de jure, de facto. The idea that every single issue, it's black and brown, black and brown, black and brown. And Latinos are going like, oh, whoa, wait, hold on. There are certain situations and circumstances. Don't conflate everything. There is no meta-narrative, meaning we are not perpetual victims. And because I am a Christian, I believe Romans 8. I am more than a conqueror through Christ our Lord. Because I am a Christian, I believe Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. In other words, Christ defines me. I am not a perpetual victim, and I am alive on this planet to do the will of God and to take my family from one level to another for the glory of Christ. I am not a perpetual victim. That's what shifted everything.
And you're not, obviously, you're not alone in those beliefs and that grounding. What would you say, and I want to throw this out because I want to take it just a little bit deeper in our understanding, those who are viewing and listening right now. Is it safe to say that many Latinos, obviously they're not homogenous, but is it safe to say that they are resisting the Democrats' constant attack on things like the family and the community of faith as a whole? These things are so deeply held beliefs within the Hispanic community. Is that the issue, that they are just resisting these constant attacks?
The Democratic Party is committing political suicide by alienating Latinos every single day more and more, by advancing agendas that are antithetical to who we are and what we believe. It could be best answered in the following, with the following queries. How many Latinos do you know believe in late-term abortions? Name one. How many Latinos that you know believe that a six-year-old can be sexually mutilated because that six-year-old is having questions about their sexual identity? And hence the government has the power to sexually endorse mutilation. How many Latinos do you know? How many Latinos do you know that actually believe Venezuela, Bolivia, Ecuador, Nicaragua, and Cuba are great examples of freedom and success? How many Latinos do you know? That answers your question. The Democratic Party is endorsing ideas. The ideology is so far-fetched from what it is to be a Latino that they are committing political suicide. Without the Latino vote, good luck with that in the next upcoming elections.
Outstanding points and outstanding questions. Those are questions, as I hear you talking about that, Pastor, I'm thinking, what demographic would embrace those things? I mean, you pose the questions in such a way of when you hear it and ponder it, you're like, who in the world could possibly agree with those comments? And yet, and let me put this back to you, broadly speaking, Democrats seem to have convinced themselves, at least, that they can take the Latino vote for granted. And you're saying not so.
Not so. Florida and Texas already are indicating. It's a prelude, what we saw in even midterm elections, previous elections. Now, North Carolina, Nevada, and Arizona. Watch Nevada and Arizona. As Latinos become more and more Protestant, more and more evangelical, they vote conservative Christian worldview. You will see that in 2024. So yes, Democrats are taking Latinos for granted. It's not a shoot. Latinos are not a solid block of the Democratic voting future apparatus. It's a wake-up call.
30 seconds. What can Republicans do to pull them in? 30 seconds.
Affirm them even more. Solidify it. Say the following. Latinos are a blessing to America, not a curse. We want Latinos to be here legally. Legally. We don't want you coming in here illegally, but Latinos are a blessing, not a curse. Talk about faith and family and limited government, parental rights. You will win more Latino voters.
Pastor Samuel Rodriguez, thank you so much. Great to have you on the program. We appreciate your incredible insight. All right, friends, after the break, Jenny Beth Martin from Tea Party Patriots will join me. Election integrity is the topic. Stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
And good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you on board with us. All right, as we continue our focus on election integrity, again, I'd like to remind you this week, my new book was released, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People, a major issue at all times for our country, but particularly as we're coming into this election cycle. And by the way, I'm pleased to say that the book has already reached number one on Amazon's new released books, and we're extremely grateful for that. But I urge you to pick up a copy wherever books are sold, or jump on Amazon wherever and get a copy. This is a major issue. And I'm excited to have my next guest. We're going to talk a few different things, but she has been in the trenches on this issue herself for a long, long time. But last week, a judge ruled that New Mexico election officials violated public disclosure provisions of the National Voter Registration Act. They refused voter rolls to a conservative group, the Voter Reference Foundation. And the organization has developed a free database of registered voters in an attempt to try to expose potential irregularities or fraud. Well, this demonstrates, again, friends, how we all need to be perpetually vigilant to monitor how various states are running their elections. And again, I'm excited to have Jenny Beth Martin with me now. She's the co-founder and national coordinator of the Tea Party Patriots. Jenny Beth, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jody. And congrats on your book reaching number one in new releases.
Well, thank you very much. We're excited about that. And, you know, this is an issue you and I have talked about a lot over the years, and one that you likewise have been right on the tip of the spear on so many times. As we look at what I just mentioned coming into this segment, have the voter rolls become the new battleground for elections, do you think?
I think that they are one of the major battlegrounds for elections. You have to have a clean roll of voters going into the election so you know who is eligible to vote in which precinct. There, many people are eligible to vote. You've just got to make sure they're voting in the right location. And what Voter Reference Foundation is doing is something that is such an excellent tool for all of us as citizens. They are working to get the voter rolls from each of the states around the country, publish them online for free for the public to examine them. And what we just saw happen this past week is they were in a lawsuit against New Mexico, who was not going to let them post the information online. And a federal court said that that was in violation of a federal law. And so they came back and said, you have to make it where you can, where voters and the public are able to examine the voter rolls. That's what the HAVA law says. And so Help America Vote Act, the HAVA law. And they said that that New Mexico has to allow Voter Reference Foundation to have the files and then to put them online. And I think that is a win. There was a similar ruling in Maine with the Public Interest Legal Foundation along the same grounds. I wouldn't be surprised if these states try to take it all the way to the Supreme Court. And I hope that if that happens, we get a ruling nation that winds up applying nationwide that we can see these voter files.
Wow, that's a huge step in the right direction. Another case that I wanted to put out to you, the Republican National Committee filed a lawsuit against Michigan's Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, who, of course, is a Democrat. But they're claiming that she covertly tried to evade the state's absentee voting protections. Can you tell us what's behind the story here? What is this all about?
Well, she had said that you have to, that if you, when they're looking to match the voter signature, the signature on the absentee ballot to the signature on file, that the election offices needed to presume that the signature matched. And that is in violation of the law. The law doesn't say presume or assume that the signature matches. It says match the signatures. And that there's a huge difference in that. We saw during 2020, especially in Georgia and in other states, that the signature match was not happening properly, and that created a lot of issues in the 2020 election. So I'm really glad to see that the Republican National Committee is proactively filing this suit because of what happened in the presidential preference primary, and hopefully they can get it straightened out before the general election, so we avoid the kind of issues that created doubt and uncertainty in the 2020 elections.
Yeah, and what we're saying, these dirty tricks can happen in states, and we have to stay vigilant. We have to stay on top of all of this. So in our closing moment or so, how would you encourage conservatives who share the same passion you and I have for election integrity, how should they get involved?
Well, if they go to teapartypatriots.org, they can sign up and get involved with us, and we will help them work to secure elections. We also have a website, help at the polls.com, and we'll teach you how to be a poll watcher and a poll worker, and then plug you into other groups like the Election Integrity Network, who are doing a lot of research on voter rolls and other areas that are needed to secure elections.
Well, it's really encouraging to me. You know, I think a lot of states have stepped up. They've recognized that there were problems. There were problems. Many states have addressed them, the legislatures thereof. And, you know, voters have to be confident that when they go to the poll, there's going to be one vote count, a legal vote cast and a legal vote counted. And there's transparency and confidence in that. Jenny Beth Martin, thank you so much for all you do, standing in the front lines for all of us. We appreciate it. Glad to have you on Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Jody.
All right, friends, after the break, Congressman Andy Biggs is going to be joining me to discuss a host of things, but one of the primary issues, the Biden border crisis. There are more developments. You don't want to miss it. We'll bring it your way right after the break. Stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
And good Thursday afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. Glad to have you with us. All right, with the November elections rapidly approaching, a recent Harvard-Harris poll has revealed that the number one issue for Americans is immigration. They see that as the single biggest issue facing our country. And given the Biden administration's mismanagement at the border, only 36% of registered voters approve of President Biden's performance on this issue. House Republicans passed H.R. 2 last year. We've talked about it a lot on this program. And, you know, it addresses the border crisis. But Senate Leader Chuck Schumer, he refuses to even bring it up in the Senate. Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Andy Biggs. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee as well as the Oversight and Accountability Committee. He represents the 5th District in Arizona. Congressman Biggs, always great to see you, my friend. Welcome to Washington Watch.
It's always good to see you, Jody. Boy, how we miss you in Congress.
Well, thank you very much. And I tell you, I pray for you guys a lot. You got your plates full. All right, let's start with this poll that I just referenced. Polls continue to indicate that the public is absolutely frustrated with the Biden border crisis. Is there any way, Congressman Biggs, that this could somehow create some leverage to get some change? Is this something that we have that we can actually use?
Well, so in a broader sense, the electorate is rising up. They, you know, brush fires of freedom with regard to this issue are being lit all over the country. They know, people know, I would say it's probably an 80-85% issue right now to secure our border. That's, you can't get much better than that. That is a great issue for a broad political issue. But more importantly, you've mentioned H.R. 2. So we have H.R. 2, which we've tried to leverage to get on spending bills and everything else, but we've been thwarted as we've tried to do that. But just think about it. This is a lawless administration, particularly where it comes to the border. And so passing more laws aren't really going to work. The best leverage we ever had were the spending bills. And you know how this works. The founding fathers gave us control of the purse strings. We should have been using that to leverage securing the border. Our leadership didn't want to go that way. And many of my colleagues didn't want to go that way either. But that was the answer. And so we're kind of stuck right now in this really difficult spot because the sheer numbers are actually higher than are being reported even by the Biden administration.
Yeah, that really complicates things the way you describe it. But I think it's important for our viewers and listeners to have an understanding of how the process works. And, you just can't miss opportunities. I know there's going to be more spending discussions come as the debate gets underway for next year's budget. But got to take advantage when it comes your way. Well, earlier this week, there was a White House press briefing. And there, the National Security Advisor, John Kirby, he said that there's nothing the president can do about the border, nothing he can do about the border crisis. I want to play this clip and then get your reaction to it.
The president absolutely believes that along that border, we do have significant national security concerns that have to be met. But you said something really good in your question that I loved, that while these concerns are going on, the bill languishes. So what's needed? It's not anything more from the president. What's needed is for Speaker Johnson to do his job and get that thing on the floor. Let's get it voted on.
Wow. Your reaction.
Well, first of all, if he's talking HR 2, that's been sitting in the Senate for a year, by the way. So his own party, and they're not moving it because Joe Biden didn't want it. I have here, this is a list of 13 executive orders that the president issued of about 80 that basically emasculated the border policies of Donald Trump that had brought the border under its most secure situation in probably 50 years. And he put these in place. Joe Biden did. He could go back and rescind those orders. Title 8 remains in place. There is a statute specifically in Title 8 that says if there's an emergency on the border or the president deems it an emergency, it doesn't even require Congress to act. If he thinks that there's an emergency on the border, he can take actions to secure and control and close that border. He needs nothing else. Title 8 didn't change. Nobody's changed Title 8. What's changed is their decision, Joe Biden's decision, not to actually implement the law under Title 8, which is the law that governs border security. Shame on them for gaslighting the American people. Shame on them for lying, because it lies directly in his control and Secretary Mayorkas's control to actually bring the border into a secure situation.
Yeah, we continue to see clips like this, and it is maddening because it's nothing but smoke and mirrors, deflection, and misinformation, lies, as you bring up. Now, you and I, we have done a lot. You are one of the leaders on border issues. I've been on a CODEL with you to the border. We've been on trips down there several times. And you also serve on the Judiciary Committee, which just yesterday announced an investigation into a massive bungling, if you will, by Homeland Security Department. And when I saw this, I was infuriated. Tell us what happened.
Well, it just depends on which bungle you're talking about, because
the one with the 200,000 cases, the cases that dismissed.
Oh yeah. So they've wrongfully dismissed cases. But I mean, Jody, this is a broader systemic problem within DHS that Mayorkas is not actually enforcing the law. So you have this aspect over here where you have wrongful dismissals, and so we're looking at that. And Chairman Jordan is all over that. But we're also looking at reports that I've received from other intel and whistleblowers that have indicated that they are actually, when I say that, DHS is actually providing these parole documents to far greater number than the Biden administration is reporting. You start looking at all of that, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah, they've bungled the thing that we're looking into that was announced yesterday, but we have to look at every aspect of what they've done, because they are out of control. We are less secure as a nation under this Homeland Security Secretary than we have been in I don't know how long. I mean, it's just hard to conceive of it. And the Biden administration is all in for that. So, yeah, Jody, yeah, we're looking at that. But there's a whole cross-section of things that I'm involved in, Jim Jordan's involved in, and the Judiciary Committee and Oversight Committees are also, you were on the Oversight Committee, so you know this. We are working on a broad spectrum dealing with DHS and their failures.
Yeah, it is just stunning to me. I mean, they failed to summons 200,000 cases. And as you mentioned, they're just dismissed. So now we have, it is unbelievable to me. And on top of that, yet another layer, it appears likely that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is simply going to dismiss the House's impeachment of Security Secretary Mayorkas without even having a trial. What do you think of that?
Well, that is an option that he has, and we hope that he doesn't. We'll be delivering those for papers next week. The resolution will be formally read. Take about 30 to 45 minutes to read the charges against Secretary Mayorkas that came out of the House. He's got other options. He's got a whole plethora of options, and I suspect he's going to try to deflect and diffuse and dismiss, as you say. I hope he doesn't. I hope he doesn't, Jody, because we have got so many things to bring forward to the American people and to the Senate that I think that if there were open minds in the Senate, they would look at it and they say, yeah, Secretary Mayorkas, you need to be removed from office. And that would be kind of a once in the history of the nation type of thing. But good grief, what he is doing is actually changing this nation. It'll take generations to fix what he has done wrong.
Yeah, and it's the arrogance with which it seems to all be taking place as well. Now, you mentioned that Schumer has this option on his plate. Can you explain to the American people why he has this option when the House puts forth an impeachment like this and it goes to the Senate? Why does he have the authority just to overlook it and say we're not going to address this?
Well, the Constitution gives the House, we do what's been an analogous to a grand jury indictment. So we've effectively indicted him by impeaching Mayorkas. The next question is the trial on that. So because he's not the executive, normally you would have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court would be called in to actually preside over that. But since he is a cabinet official, he's not going to get that. He's going to get some other officer. And Chuck Schumer, as the majority leader, controls the timing, the mechanism of that. And the Constitution doesn't say it has to be done immediately. It doesn't give any other parameters to say that, except for that, is solely in the jurisdiction of the Senate. And since it's solely in the jurisdiction of the Senate, even though historically and traditionally you've never had a trial set aside or dismissal of a sitting member of the executive branch, you've never had that go away. If he can get the votes, he can actually dismiss, table it. He could give it to a different committee instead of bringing it to the entire body of the Senate. I mean, he's got a whole host of options that he can take. And that's what even that slim majority that he enjoys in the Senate, which is very narrow, kind of like what we have in the House, very narrow. It means that he has the power to run the place and on any way he can get his votes. And that's the problem that we face, Jody.
Well, and again, I think that's very important for the American people to understand that, because many are no doubt thinking, well, the House impeached him. Doesn't the Senate have to move forward? But it's true that the power of the majority leader over there is pretty significant. Now, let's shift if we can. Coming next week, Congress is going to return to Washington. A lot of things on the table. What do you anticipate being the primary focus, or maybe a couple of primary focuses?
Well, the first thing is I've been told that we're going to have a floor vote on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act reformation. So I introduced a legislation bipartisan, bicameral. The speaker kind of kiboshed that, and now I was on a task force. We produced another bill. It is a base bill, and my understanding is that base bill will probably be the one that's considered, and then from there we will get an opportunity to bring on amendments. What has to happen, Jody, is we have to get a vote on warrant requirements on FISA. You've seen it, the abuse by the FBI. Speaking of hundreds of thousands, the FBI has abused FISA hundreds of thousands of times, even millions of times, to surveil American citizens without probable cause. And so we reformed that, and that's the bill that they killed. And so now we're trying to rehabilitate this other bill with amendments. So that should be one of the things that goes next week, is FISA with amendment process. The other thing is, I'm told that there's going to be significant movement. I don't know how real it is on this Ukraine funding package. Nobody really knows what's in this ostensible Ukraine funding package. We don't know how much it is, where it's going, what limitations are put on there. We don't know very much about that at all, but that will be another one of the main items that's going to come forward, I would think, next week or the week after.
Well, we're certainly going to be keeping a pulse on all of it. Before I let you go, I had Congressman Ralph Norman on with me yesterday, and I'd love to get your thoughts on one of the issues that we talked about. And this is coming out of the Biden's Justice Department, where they're targeting some pro-life Christians being prosecuted for simply praying and singing hymns in front of an abortion clinic in Tennessee a few years ago. What's your thoughts on this? Where is this Justice Department taking us?
Well, it's another example of weaponization. This is a Bill Clinton-era law called the FACE Act, and it was to allow access to abortion clinics. Supposedly, you couldn't protest and hinder access anywhere. But here's the deal. The FACE Act it requires intentional violence or vandalism, those types of things. And you have people who are peacefully praying and singing hymns. This Justice Department under Merrick Garland and Joe Biden has become so weaponized. They are so anti-Christian, and they're anti-religion in and of itself, but they're certainly anti-Christian. I mean, the transgender day, if that did not blow your mind, then you just weren't paying attention, because that did not have to happen the way that the Biden administration took it. And so it was one more indication, along with these poor people who are facing jail time now because of a prosecution under the FACE Act. It's shameful. It is shameful that you're seeing religious persecution in the United States of America. And I would just say to all of your viewers, it's time every religious individual wake up, every person of faith to wake up and say, no more, no more. And Chip Roy's got a great bill. I'm on it. We're trying to repeal the FACE Act, and this would be a great time for the speaker to bring it up next week. And let's rock and roll, and let's repeal the FACE Act.
A great point. And that was really going to be my last question. We only have about 30 seconds. Is there a chance for the FACE Act to just get tossed in the dustbin of history?
Yeah, there's a chance. I don't know if we've marked it up. I don't recall marking it. We should probably do a markup in judiciary, roll it to the floor, and get it out of there ASAP. That would be really wonderful, because it could also be used as kind of a legislative intent provision, not just in sentencing, but for the prosecution of these people, and maybe an appeal for these people that are facing the jail time over the FACE Act.
Congressman Andy Biggs, I love your leadership. Always great to have you on the program. Thanks for coming on and sharing with us today. And friends, that wraps up this edition of Washington Watch. Deeply grateful for you joining us. We'll be back with you again tomorrow with much more. So we'll see you then. Have a great evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.